or on foot glowered at the passing convoy. Cat frowned when she saw them, realizing just what, or rather who, was missing. There were almost no women. The only women on the streets were little girls or old mothers and grandmothers. "Odd," she said out loud. "Where are the girls?"
"They're normally kept indoors," Corporal Whisper explained. "It's quite a conservative culture here, Captain. A young woman's reputation is the key to finding her a good match. If there are suggestions, she compromised herself with a young man. She won't have a hope of getting married into a reputable family. She might even be kicked out of the house."
Cat shook her head in disbelief. "And the young men?"
"No one cares about their experience," Corporal Whisper said. "They spend more time at the brothels than working or even taking pot shots at us."
He smirked.
"We have a medical clinic responsible for handling sexually transmitted diseases," he added. "And do you know how many times it's been attacked?"
"No," Cat said.
"It hasn't," Corporal Whisper informed her. "None of the insurgents have ever gone anywhere near it."
Cat started as a bullet pinged off the canopy, followed by a rocket that slammed into the vehicle and shook it, but inflicted no real damage. Their escorts opened fire, sweeping the nearby buildings with bullets, then relaxed as the incoming fire slacked off and died. There was no way to tell if they had killed the snipers or merely forced them to take cover, but it hardly mattered. They weren't sticking around for a fight. She looked at the buildings and shivered. Half of them were pockmarked with bullet holes and other signs of damage, while the other half looked as though no one had bothered to do any maintenance for years. But she could hardly blame the locals, she realized as they swept past the buildings and across a firebreak. There was no point in repairing buildings that might be shot up again at any moment. She turned to look at Government House as it came into view and sighed again. It looked like a giant fortress, surrounded by solid walls and patrolled by soldiers on the battlements. They passed through the gates, revealing a number of short-range guns behind the walls. If someone lobbed mortar shells into the complex, she reasoned, the gunners could track the shells back to their point of origin and return fire, and if they reacted quickly enough, they might even kill the enemy mortar team before they could escape. But the cost in civilian life had to be quite high. The vehicle came to a halt. Corporal Whisper opened the hatch, revealing a grim-faced woman in a tight-fitting uniform that had to have been specially tailored to show off her body to best advantage. Cat felt a flicker of sympathy. It was clear, just from her stance, that the woman didn't want to wear the uniform, but it had been forced on her. And it was easy to guess just who had decided such a revealing uniform was a good idea. "Captain Falcone," the woman said. "I'm Commander Jeanette McIntyre, the Admiral's aide. Welcome to Cadiz." Cat studied her for a long moment. Commander McIntyre was beautiful, with long red hair and a perfect face. But her stance was all wrong. Someone had insisted she have her body upgraded, Cat decided, although it was impossible to say who. The look on McIntyre's face also suggested she wasn't inclined to share any confidences with Cat. She probably assumed the worst of her. "Thank you," Cat said, holding out a hand. "It's been an interesting tour." McIntyre smiled as she grasped Cat's hand and shook it firmly. In the distance, Cat heard the sound of explosions. "It isn't a safe place for anyone," McIntyre said finally. "The Admiral is waiting to see you." Cat followed her through a network of corridors and then a collection of offices that seemed to be crammed with bureaucrats and officers trying to maintain the occupation. She couldn't help noticing that most of them happened to be young and female, and almost none of them looked local. But that wasn't a surprise, she told herself. If none of the locals could be trusted, they couldn't be allowed to work in government. And yet that would ensure Cadiz would have almost no one versed in running a government when the Commonwealth finally withdrew. They'd fall into chaos almost at once. "Perhaps that's not a bad thing,"
she thought. At least for the workers. They would be taken for collaborators.
She pushed that thought aside as McIntyre led her into the Admiral's office. Kat had to keep her face under strict control as she glanced round.
There was a staggering amount of gilt embedded in the walls, surrounding a number of artwork from Cadiz, and then looked at the Admiral, who was standing in front of a holographic display. In person, he was even more striking. But it wasn't real. He'd definitely not had his looks spliced into his genes before birth. Like McIntyre, there was something subtly wrong about how he moved.
"Captain Falcone," he said. He held out a hand. "Welcome to Cadiz."
"Thank you, sir," Kat said. She grasped his hand, allowing him to shake hers. His handshake was perfect, too perfect. It was just like the curtsies would-be aristocratic women were expected to drop every time they encountered someone from a high-ranking family. "It's good to be here."
Admiral Morrison studied her for a long moment, his gaze seemingly welcoming. But Kat detected an element of cold calculation behind his smile. She forced herself to hold still under his scrutiny, then allowed herself a moment of relief as he finally let go of her hand and motioned her towards a chair. Kat sat down and crossed her legs, then frowned inwardly as the Admiral sat on the sofa facing her. His poise was again perfect, too perfect. It was just like the rest of him.
"I understand that you have had an eventful trip," Admiral Morrison said. "A captured pirate ship, no less."
Kat's eyes narrowed. She hadn't sent any report to the Admiral, not yet. By tradition, the first report was always supposed to be made in person.
But the convoy master might have filed a report of his own. Or someone might have noticed they were towing a pirate ship with them. There were too many possibilities.
"Yes, sir," she said. "We took the ship intact, capturing some of its crew and liberating some of its slaves, all of whom are currently held in stasis. I would like to transfer them to the planet's surface as quickly as possible." The Admiral made a dismissive wave with his hand.
"You can make arrangements with my aide for the prisoners to be added to the holding pens," he said. "The former captives can remain in stasis until they can be shipped to Tyre."
Kat frowned. "They can't receive treatment here?"
"There are better facilities on Tyre," the Admiral said.
Kat felt her frown deepen. There might well be better facilities on Tyre, but not by much, and certainly not better enough to justify keeping the former captives in stasis until they were transferred to yet another planet. But it was the Admiral's call. If the situation on the ground was as bad as it seemed, the hospitals on the planet's surface might be overflowing with casualties. Besides, sending them back to Tyre would make it harder for anyone to cover up the pirate attack.
"Yes, sir," she said, finally. "We also found some disturbing evidence on the pirate ship."
She briefly outlined what they'd discovered, and the conclusions they'd drawn afterwards. The Admiral seemed attentive enough, but she'd enough career experience to tell he wasn't really interested. She couldn't tell if he was playing dumb or if he genuinely didn't care, but either way it was worrying. It was also in line with everything else she'd seen since entering the system.
"Admiral," she concluded,
"someone is backing the pirates. There is simply no other explanation."
"They're pirates," Admiral Morrison said with a sneer. "They're hardly an organized fighting force."
"They don't have to be," Kat said. "All they have to do is attack and destroy our shipping." She thought, briefly, of her father's warnings. If freighters continued to be lost to causes unknown, insurance rates would start to rise steeply. This would lead to increased shipping costs, which would drive many of the smaller firms out of business, and force the larger firms to tighten their belts. It was quite likely, she knew, that the bigger corporations were downplaying the situation purely to avoid an economic downturn. But they couldn't keep the pretense up indefinitely. "The pirates are taking losses too," Kat added. They couldn't operate their starships without a backer, certainly not if they're blowing up prizes rather than selling them.
There's no proof, the Admiral said. I do not believe that accusations of anything would improve relationships between ourselves and the theocracy.
We have plenty of evidence that something is very wrong, Kat insisted. Who else benefits? Admiral Morrison offered a look of nonchalance.
I hope you will attend my party, he said. There will be dignitaries from all over the system in attendance.
The sudden change in subject left Kat feeling breathless. Admiral,
I believe most of my super dreadnought commanders will attend, Morrison continued, as if she hadn't spoken. The CEO of Cadiz Incorporated will also be attending. He was particularly interested in meeting you.
Oh, Kat said.
Indeed, the Admiral agreed. I think he has a proposal he wishes to put before you.
I have no say in the affairs of Falcone, Kat said flatly. It was true. Her eldest brother would inherit most of the family stock, leaving her with just her trust fund and a bundle of non-voting stock. The discussion would not be productive. She took a breath, knowing she was about to put her career on the line. Admiral, she added, how can you ignore the growing threat to our shipping lines? For a moment, she saw a trace of anger behind the Admiral's eyes, and then it was gone.
The decision to annex Cadiz was, in my view, a mistake, the Admiral said, finally.
His voice was so flat, she just knew he was using implants to keep it under control. That, too, was rude, at least in private conversation.
We did something very provocative, something that could have provoked a war, something that could have torn our government apart, purely for our own selfless interests. It would be smart for us to refrain from any other provocative actions in the future.
He cleared his throat loudly.
Your ship will escort the convoy to the border in 5 days, once several pieces of cargo have been loaded onto the freighters, he continued.
His tone made it clear he considered the assignment a punishment.
After that, we will discuss your future operations.
Kat fought down the urge to grind her teeth in frustration. How could the Admiral be so blind? But the hell of it was that he had a point. The decision to annex Cadiz had come alarmingly close to tearing the Commonwealth apart, no matter the justification behind it. Thank you, sir, she said, rising to her feet. I will return to my ship.
My aide will show you out, the Admiral said.
He stood, and then held out a hand.
And I do trust I will see you at one of my parties, Captain. I believe you have a great deal to offer.
Yes, sir, Kat said. She shook the Admiral's hand reluctantly. But my starship always comes first. Chapter 13 Night was falling over Cadiz spaceport as the shuttle dropped down to the landing pad and landed neatly, the pilot shutting down the drives moments later. William climbed to his feet, opened the hatch, and stepped through onto the tarmac. The air was cooler than the captain had reported, but there was a strange smell that bothered him more than he cared to admit. It reminded him of his home world. Behind him, the 49 officers and crew who had been assigned to the shore leave roster strode out of the shuttle. He turned round to face them, sighing inwardly. There was something about the prospect of shore leave that turned even the most disciplined spacers into a rowdy mob. He cleared his throat loudly, and they quieted, knowing he could still bar them from leave, even now.
You should all have reviewed the safety briefing before boarding the shuttle, he said.
Knowing some of them probably wouldn't have taken the time to even skim the file.
Do not attempt to leave the spaceport or enter any secure zone. Should you do either, you'll probably spend an uncomfortable night in the cells before I come and get you.
He paused as the sound of helicopters clattered overhead before fading away in the distance, then continued.
Do not spend more than you have on your credit card. Do not come stumbling back to the shuttle drunk. And do not do anything you don't want to appear on your service record, he added.
He turned and pointed towards the shore leave section.
Dismissed.
The crew cheered, then ran past him and through the gates. William snorted, knowing he'd been just as enthusiastic once upon a time, and then strode after them with casual, measured steps. The thought of shore leave was hypnotic, he had to admit. But it wasn't really what he wanted, not now. 48 hours was hardly enough to relax properly. Once upon a time, he'd booked himself into a hotel and just spent 4 days in bed. He smiled as he passed through the gates and peered down the long road. It looked like any other strip of entertainment intended to keep spacers happy on shore leave. A line of bars, strip clubs, gambling arcades, and brothels. His smile grew wider at some of the memories. Then he sobered as he caught sight of 2 armored marines patrolling the street. No matter how hard they tried to disguise it, the spaceport was a prime target for the insurgency. It wouldn't be hard for a spy to slip through the gates and cause trouble. A line of spacers, the gold badges on their collars marking them as Super Dreadnought crew, came pouring out of one of the bars heading towards the brothels. They'd clearly not spent much time on shore leave, William decided, recalling his own adventures. It was generally better to go to the brothel first rather than the bars or gambling joints. The only spacer he recalled spending much time gambling while on shore leave had been an asexual teetotaler, someone who wasn't interested in anything else. Everyone else knew the games tended to be rigged, no matter what the house promised. He sighed, feeling too responsible to just go to a brothel and carouse, then turned and walked towards the bar at the top of the road. The title, emblazoned on the door in glowing letters, read Officer Down. It wasn't particularly funny, he decided, as he pushed the door open, but it was unlikely any of the junior ranks would dare enter. The establishment was meant for officers and officers alone.
No doubt there's a higher class of prostitute here, he thought, as he closed the door behind himself and glanced round.
The interior looked like a high-class cafe on Tyre, one of the places that sold cakes and cream teas along with expensive liquor and fancy drinks.
And I'm too poor to spend any time here.
William! A female voice called. It is you, isn't it?
William stared. He knew that voice.
William! Commander Fran Higgins said. Long time no see.
You too, William said.
He walked over and sat down facing her.
I didn't know you would be here.
I'd have called you if I'd known, Fran agreed.
She smiled as the waiter arrived, carrying a small notebook in one hand rather than a data terminal.
My friend here would like a cream plum, thank you.
The waiter bowed and retreated. William blinked in surprise, then looked at Fran. She looked almost as he remembered, with short brown hair and a face that was solid rather than pretty, but she looked tired. In a way, she looked older than William himself, and he knew she was 10 years younger.
It's good to see you again, Fran, he said.
But why are you drinking here?
Commander Higgins gave him a sharp look.
Why are you drinking here?
Touché, William said.
I'm here because I don't want to have fun in front of the crew.
Fran snorted rudely.
Snap!
The waiter returned, carrying a small glass, which he placed in front of William. The XO eyed it doubtfully. It seemed too fragile for him to pick up, then reached for it and took a sip. The taste was surprisingly strong, but seemed to have relatively little alcohol. But that probably shouldn't have been a surprise. Officers were not meant to get drunk in public. He settled back and looked at Fran, taking in the signs of someone who had been worked to breaking point. Her hands twitched constantly, her eyes kept flashing from side to side, and she looked worn.
He couldn't help wondering if he should book a hotel room and implore her to actually sleep for a few short hours, perhaps with the help of a sedative. But he knew she'd kick him somewhere painful if he even dared hint she should take a break.
"I only just arrived," he said, once the waiter was out of earshot.
They'd have more hope of keeping their conversation private in one of the louder bars further down the strip.
"How long have you been here?"
"Years," Fran said. She eyed her drink, but made no move to take a sip. "Or at least it feels that way. I think it's been round 11 months.
William felt a shiver of alarm.
"You think?"
"I try to forget it," Fran said. "Defiant is not a happy ship."
"I see," William said after a moment. "But you're her XO, aren't you?"
"Of course," Fran said. She tapped her uniform meaningfully, drawing his attention to the silver badge on her shoulder. "Only one XO, and that's me."
She sighed.
"And a whole fucking pile of shit on my shoulders," she added. "You want my advice? Run. Run far."
"I don't think that's an option,"
William said. He took a breath.
"Fran, what's happening here?"
Fran sipped her drink. She was already marginally drunk, William realized, or she wouldn't have let anything slip. The Fran Higgins he remembered had been a paragon of efficiency and emotional control. If she was turning to liquor, it wasn't a good sign.
Defiant, a super dreadnought, was definitely not a happy ship.
"We were a good squadron when we were assigned to Cadiz," Fran said mournfully.
"The Commodore might have been a political appointee, but he was a good man. The captain had years in the service, plenty of time to know what to do with himself and what to leave to me. I thought a deployment to Cadiz would allow us plenty of time to train and exercise for the war. But I was wrong."
She shook her head.
"It's all fucked up, William," she added. "Like I said, take your ship and run."
"I can't do that,"
William said.
"What's wrong?"
Fran laughed bitterly. "Where do I even start?"
She shrugged.
"No training exercises," she said.
"Half the crew on shore leave at any one time. Shore patrolmen getting into trouble because they don't have the sense to stay out of shit. The captain spending most of his time on the planet's surface. The Commodore kissing up to the Admiral rather than sticking up for his crews. I can't run regular maintenance cycles, and the ship is practically unserviceable. We're fucked if we have to get into a fight without at least a week to prepare for action."
William blanched.
"It's that bad?"
"It's worse," Fran said. She took a long swallow, finishing her glass, then waved to the waiter. "Another!"
"Water would be better," William said quickly.
"You're not the boss of me any longer," Fran thundered. "You didn't try to screw me. The captain is certainly trying to screw me."
Her voice slurred for a long moment, then recovered.
"If someone inspects the ship, I'm screwed," she said with heavy satisfaction. "I will take the blame."
She wouldn't take the blame alone, William knew, at least if regulations were honored and the IG carried out the inspection. The buck stopped with the vessel's commanding officer. But if the captain and the admiral carried out the inspection, it might be possible to blame Fran, assuming no one took a close look at the reports. And, with Fran a nobody, politically speaking, it might just be shoved under the rug.
"Shit," he said.
"Yeah,"
Fran agreed.
"Shit."
She met his eyes.
"You have no idea just how many problems we've had," she said darkly. "One of the shore patrolmen walked out an airlock, another was beaten halfway to death by someone, we still don't know who. Exercises would help the crew pull back together, but I'm not even allowed to run them. Apparently, they cost too much money."
William winced. Naval bases had a specific budget each year. If there was a shortfall, canceling training exercises seemed an excellent way to save funds. But it was a false saving.
Troops and starship crews who had no time to exercise tended to lose competency alarmingly fast. If they had to go into battle, they'd be screwed. He placed his hand on top of the drink when the waiter placed it on the table. Is Seventh Fleet combat capable? Fran surprised him by laughing hysterically.
I doubt there's a single ship in the fleet that can move under her own power, she said. The super dreadnoughts certainly can't without some hasty repair work.
William hoped, desperately, she was exaggerating. If she was correct, Seventh Fleet was effectively a sitting duck. Cadiz had some planet-side defenses, but hardly enough to make a real difference if the theocracy came knocking. Besides, the locals would definitely rise up against the occupation force, and move from the frying pan into the fire. The Commonwealth meant well, even though it had blundered badly. Theocratic rule would be far worse. He took a long look at her, feeling pity intermingled with rage. The Fran Higgins he'd known had been a capable officer, not a drunken wreck. She deserved better. Hell, the crews on the fleet's starships deserved better, too. They were wasting away because their commanders were more interested in partying than actually carrying out their duties. If any of her subordinates saw her like this, he knew they'd lose all respect for her.
Tell me something, he said. Have you not filed a complaint?
9 of us did, Fran said. We never heard anything back from the IG. William swore under his breath. Admiral Morrison might well be able to prevent a formal complaint from ever leaving the system, assuming he had a crony or two in charge of the Starcom. But he couldn't move against the complainers without ensuring they had their chance to face a court-martial board. Instead, he seemed to have just left matters as they were. It wasn't a smart way to behave. He signaled the waiter.
I understand you have rooms upstairs, he said.
He placed his credit chip on the table.
I want one of those rooms and a sober-up injection, now.
Yes, sir, the waiter said. He took the chip with practiced ease, then stepped back. If you will come with me. William helped a protesting Fran to her feet, then half carried her through the door and up a flight of stairs. One of the doors on the next floor was open, revealing a naked man and a girl kneeling in front of him sucking his penis. William was silently grateful he didn't recognize him, even though he had to be a fairly senior officer. He knew, intellectually, that his superiors had sexual drives too, but he didn't want to think about it. Thankfully, Captain Falcombe didn't seem to be interested in patronizing bars or brothels. The room was larger than he'd expected, certainly larger than any room in a more average brothel. He positioned Fran on the bed, took the injector from the waiter, and pressed it against her neck. She glared daggers at him as the injection shot into her system, then stumbled to her feet and into the toilet. Moments later, he heard the sound of vomiting as the alcohol left her bloodstream, along with everything she'd eaten over the past few hours. He waited as patiently as he could until she walked back into the bedroom, looking murderous.
You're a bastard, she said as she sat down on the bed and removed her jacket. Her uniform was badly stained.
You could at least have let me go back to the shuttle before I took the injection.
Friends don't let friends fly shuttles while drunk, William pointed out. Besides, I dread to imagine what would happen to your service record if you were found drunk and disorderly.
Under the circumstances, Fran said, that wouldn't be a problem. She placed her head in her hands, embarrassed.
I'm sorry, William, she said,
refusing to look up. You shouldn't have seen me like that.
I'm glad you still have some dignity left, William said gently. Besides, I can't chew you out any longer.
I suppose not, Fran said. She paused.
How much did I tell you?
Enough to worry me,
William said. How much had she drunk? Short-term memory loss wasn't normally a problem.
Is your captain really leaving everything in your hands?
Fran looked down at the grubby floor.
Yes, she said finally.
but I don't even begin to have the tools to fix this mess.
William, for the first time in far too long, found himself completely at a loss. He'd prepared himself on the assumption he would be doing most of the work on Lightning, an assumption that had rapidly proven false. But Fran definitely seemed to be doing most of the work, without the crew or authority that would make it possible. He honestly had no idea how to proceed. There were ways to handle a misbehaving crewman, even to manipulate a tyrannical commanding officer, but this?
The IG needs to come here, he thought numbly.
Like most officers, he hated the Inspectorate General, viewing them as a bunch of useless bureaucrats or desk jockeys who didn't have the slightest idea of how things really worked. But they were needed now.
This isn't one ship, this is the entire goddamned fleet.
He looked at her. She shouldn't go back to her ship, not in such a state.
Tell me, he said. How long until you're due back on Defiant?
2 days, Fran said. But I should go back earlier. William let out a sigh of relief.
You can stay here and sleep, he said, firmly. I want you going back to the ship in tip-top condition.
For what? Fran asked bitterly. I can't make it all better.
You can try, William said. And besides, you owe it to yourself.
He thought briefly about telling her about the pirate attack and the worrying pattern behind it, but then decided it could wait.
I'll get you a sedative, he said instead. You can sleep here until you wake up naturally.
Fran objected loudly. William understood. He hated the idea of being sedated too, even with someone he trusted in the room, but there was no choice. In her state, Fran was unlikely to sleep very well without chemical aid. He keyed the console, requesting a sedative, then cast his eye down the list of other options. Some of them were truly alarming, others were merely amusing. What sort of commanding officer would want a pair of leather handcuffs?
Maybe one who has dreams of whipping crewmen, he thought.
It was understandable. There were quite a few crewmen he'd met who might have benefited from a whipping.
Or maybe one who's just a sadist.
He picked up the sedative when it arrived, then held it up in front of her.
Lie down, he ordered, firmly. You're about to go to sleep.
Fran sighed. I feel like a failure, she said. Her tone was so bitter that William almost insisted she see a counselor, but he thought better of it. Few officers would gladly visit someone who could have them removed from duty without a word.
I've failed the crew. You'll have a chance to make it better, William promised.
The captain wanted his impressions of the situation on the ground. She'd get more than she ever expected, particularly once he started looking up other friends attached to Seventh Fleet.
And you can't fight for your crews without a good night's sleep.
He pressed the tab against her arm, then sat back and watched as she fell into slumber. Her face relaxed, until she was almost the younger officer he remembered, before she'd been assigned to Admiral Morrison's command. He felt a spark of bitter hatred, even though he'd never met the man. What could have gone so badly wrong that it would cripple a woman he'd once known to be a good officer?
And not just her, he told himself. Whatever rot started here has spread through the entire fleet. If the theocracy comes knocking...
He shuddered. If half of what Fran had said was true... The thought was far from comforting. Chapter 14 Kat waited until her steward had served her XO and Davidson steaming mugs of coffee, taking another cup for herself as well, then leaned forward, placing her hands on her desk. The situation looks bad, she said. Just how bad is it?
Disastrous, the two men said together.
They exchanged surprised looks, then Davidson motioned for the XO to continue.
I spoke to several other officers I know, William said.
All of them agreed that Seventh Fleet is in no condition for a fight. The average super dreadnought is at 40% efficiency, which may be an optimistic assessment. It's a little better for some of the smaller ships, as they still have useful work to do, but not that much better. The list of problems seems endless.
Cat nodded slowly. A cruiser could expect to serve as anything from an independent scouting platform to a convoy escort or colony guardship. No sane CO would risk allowing his ship to decline too far, knowing he might have to switch tasks at any moment. But super dreadnoughts spent far too much of their time near fleet bases, close to shore leave facilities for officers and crew alike. It took a strong-minded commander to keep his crew at peak efficiency when the temptations of the nearby planet were so strong. The XO sighed.
Overall, he added, it seems likely that a mere squadron of super dreadnoughts could best Seventh Fleet if they attacked tomorrow.
He ran his hand through his graying hair.
Some of the officers I spoke with have been attempting to do something about the problem, but they haven't been able to get any response from the Admiralty. And Admiral Morrison keeps poo-pooing their concerns. A handful of officers who pushed it too far, apparently, were relieved for cause and assigned to asteroid bases in the sector. None of them were sent home for court-martial.
Because a court-martial would have required open discussion of just what was happening on Cadiz, Cat said thoughtfully. Instead, their careers were destroyed. She cursed under her breath. Her trust fund ensured she didn't have to work a day in her life if she wanted to resign herself to an eternity of lazy luxury. But no one outside the aristocracy had that option, even a senior naval officer. The officers would have noted what happened to others who questioned too loudly and shut up, despite the growing risk of attack. They wouldn't want to see their careers blighted, too.
Yes, Captain, the XO confirmed. Admiral Morrison seems to have been remarkably successful in keeping matters under wraps.
Cat looked at Davidson. And what did you hear?
Davidson looked irked.
I called a handful of Marine officers on the surface, he said darkly. Most of them agreed the situation is dire, both in space and on the ground. The insurgency is still holding strong. The occupation forces are having to fight hard to hold their ground, and senior officers are losing control. There have even been rumors that the insurgents have been dehumanized to the point where atrocities have been covered up. I wish I could say it surprises me.
Cat lifted her eyebrows expressively.
Occupation duties are always tricky, Davidson said. A soldier on patrol can lose sight of common decency when confronted by a civilian population that either does nothing or actively supports the insurgents. The urge to just hit out and smash the grinning bastards into paste becomes overwhelming. It doesn't help that there simply aren't enough forces on the ground to keep the entire planet under control. Our troops have been substituting superior firepower for boots on the ground.
The XO frowned.
So an area is only under control as long as we have troops on top of it?
Yes, Davidson agreed.
Once the troops move away, the insurgents move back and take control again. Anyone who collaborated with our forces gets brutally murdered. By now, the only people willing to work with the occupation forces are locals without connections or people who believe we can protect their families.
He winced noticeably.
But even they are bearing the brunt of suspicion, he added. I heard a dozen horror stories from a couple of Marines. If we didn't have overwhelming firepower in orbit, Captain, I think we would have lost Cadiz by now.
But we have handled insurgencies on other Commonwealth worlds, Cat said thoughtfully. Why can't we handle this one?
Every other world had a large majority in favor of joining the Commonwealth, Davidson reminded her. All we really had to do was train and bolster the local security forces, then assist them in asserting control over the hinterlands. Hell, most of the insurgencies faded away when the benefits of Commonwealth membership became apparent. Here, the locals largely hate our guts, with reason. The insurgency shows no sign of going away.
and we can't build up a local force allied to us, the Exo said. But surely some of them see the advantages.
Not enough of them, Davidson said, cutting him off. The whole situation is FUBAR, Captain. We can't fix the occupation and we can't abandon the star system.
Perhaps we should simply abandon the planet itself, the Exo said. It isn't as if we need to have installations on Cadiz.
Kat took a moment to breathe.
Interstellar law was an odd thing. All the more so now the aftereffects of the breakdown were slowly fading away. Technically, whoever owned Cadiz owned the entire system, which meant the investments made in the system would be at risk if Cadiz was abandoned and allowed to go its own merry way. There were a dozen large corporations in the Commonwealth that would refuse to accept losing control of their investments. But with Cadiz 5 being terraformed, there might soon be a second settled world in the system. It was a horrible, ghastly mess.
But we would have overwhelming firepower, she thought slowly. What would it matter what Cadiz thought if they couldn't reach orbit?
It would look very bad, she said, finally. It wouldn't play well at home, and it wouldn't play well with the other interstellar powers, or even the other independent worlds along the rim. The theocracy will probably make use of the whole story to convince people we can't be trusted.
They'd have to be out of their minds, the Exo commented. Haven't they been listening to what the refugees told us?
It's easy to manipulate the news, Kat said, remembering one of the few lessons she'd had directly from her father. The Falcone Consortium owned a large chunk of the mainstream media. No editor would dare run a story that impinged on the corporation's interests. And the theocracy is very good at it.
She remembered the reports and shivered.
There were no independent media outlets on theocratic worlds, no one pushing anything but the official version of events. The locals welcomed the theocracy. They either converted happily or lived in peace under their own religions, and everything was simply wonderful. Kat knew the refugees told a different story. But they simply didn't have the reach and exposure theocratic propaganda had. And the farther away a planet was from the expanding border, the more likely its population would believe the theocracy's version of affairs.
We should be telling them the truth, she thought.
But the truth sounded less attractive than a barrage of lies.
Or we should forward the refugees onto them.
The overall situation is dire, Kat said finally. She took a sip of her coffee. Mr. Exo, there are some things we need to discuss with you. The thought made her feel a twinge of pain. She'd had the sense the Exo had come to respect her, at least to some degree, after they'd tackled the pirate ship. Maybe she was still too young for her role, but at least she'd handled the situation competently. And yet, now she had to discuss her father's request for information with him. It was easy to imagine him considering her willingness to cooperate with her father a form of disloyalty to the Navy. She shook her head. What choice did she have? I wasn't just assigned to command this starship, she said, hesitatingly. I was also asked to carry out an independent review of Seventh Fleet and Cadiz's security. The Exo's face went blank. Kat sighed, mentally bidding farewell to their new rapport, then pressed onwards. Davidson showed no reaction. I have a back channel through the Starcom, she continued. The message I send won't be intercepted or read by prying eyes. I intend to write a full report on what we've observed over the last 2 days.
Admiral Morrison will be furious if he finds out you've gone behind his back, the Exo said mildly. This isn't sending a private report to the IG, is it?
He hadn't asked who would receive Kat's message, she noted. Was it that obvious?
Of course it is, she told herself angrily. Who else would request a report from right outside the normal channels from you?
No, it isn't, Kat said. She loved her career, but she could give it up if necessary. Besides, she could always formally protest an assignment to an asteroid station and demand a court-martial. She had a feeling Admiral Morrison would bend over backwards to avoid putting her in front of a captain's board. But I don't see any other option.
You would be making yourself a pawn in a political struggle, the XO said in the same mild tone.
It was impossible to tell if he approved or disapproved of her actions.
Whatever happened, Captain, your career would never be your own again.
It never has been, Kat said, unable to keep the bitterness from her tone. She looked at him, wishing she could read his face. The entire report will be under my name. The XO shook his head.
I just saw an officer I trained, an officer I respected, trying to drink herself to death, he said softly. She just couldn't cope any longer with the strain placed on her by her superiors. It has to be stopped.
He paused.
Feel free to put my name on the report as well, he offered. It might help if your readers think it isn't just your work.
Kat gave him a relieved smile, even though she knew he had far more at stake than she did. Her XO was a powerless nobody, someone who hadn't even been born a Commonwealth citizen. His career could be blighted or destroyed completely with a word or two from Admiral Morrison. Kat could fund him, perhaps even find him a place within the Falcone Consortium, but it wouldn't be the same. Yet he was offering to place his career at risk for her.
Mine too, Davidson said, breaking his silence.
He hesitated, minutely. It would have been unnoticeable if Kat hadn't known him so well.
Captain, I confess I have no idea why General Eastside has not reported the situation to Tyre. But I do have to make a report myself.
Kat wasn't surprised. The Marine Corps, always on the tip of the spear, encouraged its junior officers to send reports and feedback back to Tyre. There were times when it allowed officers to do an end run around a sometimes stodgy military bureaucracy. But someone should have already reported the problems, not settled for rumors and innuendo. Why hadn't the senior Marine on the spot reported the problem himself?
Add it to mine, Kat advised. I don't want anyone to read the report until it reaches Tyre.
The XO smiled.
Afraid of what the Admiral will say?
I'd prefer not to pick a fight with him right now, Kat said. Part of her would relish the confrontation, but it would be disastrous. The issue at hand could be easily buried if enough people were convinced she was a snotty little brat who initiated a feud because she wasn't happy with her orders. And I would prefer to have the IG send out a team without any more fuss than strictly necessary.
Their presence might alert the theocracy that their window for attack is closing,
the XO agreed. He looked down at the table, thoughtfully.
The Admiralty might want to assign 3 new squadrons of super dreadnoughts to Cadiz, then remove Admiral Morrison and call back 7th Fleet for refit.
Kat leaned forward, alarmed. It's that bad?
I think several of the super dreadnoughts will need months of hard labor before they'll be anything like combat capable,
the XO said.
He paused.
You know you can download fleet statistics from the datanet.
Yes, Kat said.
She'd been an XO. Maybe not as long as he'd been an XO, but she knew a few tricks. It had been an eye-opening experience in many ways. Most of the captains spend their days on the surface.
There's supposed to be a note in the database every time a component is requisitioned from naval stockpiles and sent to a starship,
the XO said.
Right now, only 100 or so requisitions have been made over the last 4 months.
That's absurd, Kat said. Lightning alone had made over 500 requisitions since she'd taken command. A super dreadnought should have, she tried to work it out in her head, at least 1,000 a month.
The XO gave her a cold smile.
Or they're not doing any maintenance, he said.
Naval components are tough. but standing orders are to replace them long before they reach their expiration date. If they're not being replaced regularly.
Davidson cleared his throat.
This is starting to look like more than incompetence, he said, grimly. This is starting to look like outright treason.
The XO blinked.
Are you suggesting Admiral Morrison is in the pay of the theocracy? Someone should have reported this up the chain of command, Davidson said. He tapped off points on his fingers as he spoke. There's a duty, a legal duty, for Marine officers to report superiors who are grossly incompetent. Naval officers? Well, someone might well have tried to blow a whistle by now.
Fran did, the XO said, quietly.
So did others.
And those reports haven't reached the Admiralty, Davidson said.
I certainly wasn't told more than rumors when I received my orders, and there should have been a full briefing from Marine Intelligence. This smacks of outright treason.
Kat considered it slowly. It was possible, she had to admit, but it didn't seem likely. The Admiral could have surrendered the planet to the theocracy by now if he'd been working for them directly. A few careful orders prior to attack and Seventh Fleet would be utterly incapable of defending itself. Why would the theocracy play a waiting game when the chances of their agent being exposed would only grow stronger with each passing day? Someone would eventually get a message to the Admiralty. Admiral Morrison is the blue-eyed boy of a number of politicians, she said finally, remembering her father's files. They put him in position in the hopes of preventing any further adventurism.
This is madness, Davidson said. His political backers can't save him from a shitstorm of that magnitude.
I don't think they give a damn about his career, Kat said. All they care about is ensuring we don't blunder into a war.
As opposed to having one rammed down our throats when the theocracy comes over the border, Davidson said dryly. Are they out of their minds?
But Kat understood. Reality was a flexible concept if one happened to be as wealthy and powerful as the highest families on Tyre. Wealth insulated them from the cold equations of everyday life. Indeed, no matter how much money they spent, it was unlikely they could ever bankrupt themselves. But some problems couldn't be bought off by money. She had a feeling, when the investigation finally took place, that they wouldn't discover a vast overarching conspiracy. Instead, they'd discover a thousand tiny decisions that made sense individually, but added up to disaster. She could understand Admiral Morrison wanting to avoid provocation. She could understand the shipping companies wanting to avoid a rise in insurance rates. She could understand officers not wanting to blight their careers. She could understand bureaucratic supply officers not wanting to give up their supplies. Or was it a conspiracy after all?
It seemed absurdly paranoid. A conspiracy on that scale would be either unworkable or unstoppable. She knew how hard it was to keep even a small organization a secret. And yet, even paranoids had enemies.
I will write the report, she said. We're scheduled to leave in 4 days, escorting the convoy to the border. I'll transmit it just before we leave.
Davidson frowned. I can't say I'm happy with doing this in such an underhand manner, he confessed. Is it right?
Kat hesitated. Davidson had always been honorable. It was one of the things she'd loved about him. He preferred to do things in a direct manner, if possible, rather than sneak around behind his superior's back.
I don't see that we have any choice, the XO said. If we file a report through channels, it will go missing somewhere along the way.
I agree, Kat said simply. We can't take the chance.
Then I will write a formal report for Marine HQ, Davidson said. Can you send it with your message?
Yes, Kat said.
Her father might try to use what she'd sent for political advantage. If the report went to Marine HQ too, it would be harder for him to suppress it.
And I'll also suggest reinforcements be sent.
before anything else happens. She dismissed them both, then sat back in her chair, feeling very old. Part of her hated the idea of sneaking around a senior officer. And that, she knew, was precisely what she was doing, no matter how she tried to disguise it. Admiral Morrison wore the same uniform and she was conspiring against him. Yet she knew there was no choice. The condition of Seventh Fleet grew worse every day. Slowly, she reached for her private terminal and started to write.
Chapter 15.
Transit completed, Captain,
Weiberg reported. Good, the captain said. Set course for the rendezvous point.
Aye, Captain, Weiberg said. Estimated flight time 2 days.
William nodded to himself, knowing the die had been firmly cast. He and the captain had spent the last 4 days writing a careful summary of their observations, attaching a number of off-the-record comments from his contacts on the fleet, then uploading it into the Starcom message buffer. The codes the captain had been given, he'd been told, should ensure that the message would be transmitted at once, then wiped from the buffer. It should be impossible for any unfriendly eyes to read the report without the correct codes.
And if we're wrong about that, he thought morbidly, our careers will be in the shithole.
He pushed the thought aside as he watched the display update. 10 freighters, another had joined them at Cadiz, were slowly making their way through hyperspace, shadowed by the giant heavy cruiser. William rather doubted the ships would be attacked, particularly if the theocracy was backing the pirates, but he knew better than to take that for granted. After all, it would look even more suspicious if theocracy-bound freighters were the only ones spared pirate attacks. A dull quiver ran through the ship and he smiled. They were on their way. There had been some good-natured grumbling from the lower decks about the shortage of shore leave. He'd ended up giving some of the crew only a few short hours on the planet's surface, but it felt good to be heading away from Cadiz. He didn't want the lethargy affecting the fleet to infest lightning. And it wouldn't. Not while he was XO. Even if Admiral Morrison insisted on keeping them at Cadiz, he would ensure an endless series of training exercises to keep the crew sharp. He looked at the captain's blonde head and felt an odd flicker of affection. It had been brave of her to tell him the truth, knowing he might start disliking her again, or take it to the Admiral. Her career would probably have survived, but no one would ever have trusted her again. What CO would trust an officer who had spied on another officer? She might start spying on him next. But her father was right, he had to admit. There was something deeply wrong at Cadiz Naval Base. He'd gone through the records and watched, in alarm, as standards had slowly dropped ever since Admiral Morrison had been appointed CO. Maybe it was deliberate after all, he wondered, although there was no way to tell. And, if so, was it for political reasons or outright treason? The sooner the IG carried out a full audit, the better. Mr. XO, the captain said, formally. She turned to face him. You may conduct your inspection of the Wandering Soul.
Aye, Captain, William said.
He saluted, then turned and walked through the hatch towards Marine Country, where Davidson, a platoon of Marines, and a handful of inspectors were already waiting for him, the Marines carrying weapons and looking thoroughly intimidating. William wasn't expecting trouble on board the Wandering Soul, but it was well to be prepared. He hadn't bothered to tell the freighter CO there would be an inspection. It would only have upset him ahead of time. They scrambled into the shuttle, then launched from Lightning and flew towards the Wandering Soul. Like most freighters, William noted, she was ugly as hell, little more than a boxy superstructure with a drive section attached to the rear. There were no weapons, according to the manifest, although that meant nothing. He wouldn't have been surprised to find a handful of weapons fittings mounted on the starship's hull. He keyed the communicator.
Wandering Soul, this is Commander McElney, he said. I intend to board and inspect your vessel for contraband goods. Please open an airlock for my shuttle.
There was a long pause.
Commander, I must formally protest, a belligerent voice snapped. My ship was inspected at Cadiz and we have not made landfall elsewhere.
We have authority to inspect any freighter traveling in convoy at any moment, William said, cutting him off.